We're starting a Christmas series. There'll be some teaching through this month, some Advent themes, and this is the artwork that I've chose, although it looks like the Christmas at the bottom got a little confused with the Christmas lights, but that's okay. Maybe it adds to the message here. The idea being this one, and this is the question we're going to be asking, and so this is Christmas, and of course if you're any kind of a pop culture music sort of person, you'll know the next line is, and... Exactly. I saw there was only one person that got that. What if I sang the first line, and so this is Christmas, and there you go. There is more than one person in the room that understands the quote. So anyways, it's, and so this is Christmas, and this week we're going to look at corporate Christmas, and we're going to be using some other words that you might not align with Christmas in the weeks to come, but this Sunday we're going to talk about corporate Christmas. I remember several years ago, we were driving down a road, a highway in Canada, going from one city to the next, and on one of those family Christmas trips, you know. And you know what Hummers are? The great big trucks that it kind of came from the army, and then they, you know, the H1, H2, and H3, and then he gone. I don't think there are Hummers anymore, but anyways, this was at least an H2, maybe the big one, and it was bright red, so Christmassy enough already, in my opinion. But then as it passed us, because it passed us like we were standing still, there were Christmas lights wrapped around the spare tire thing on the back. And I just thought, man, that's just not necessary. And literally my wife said this. She goes, it must be a lady's truck. I didn't say it. She said it. And I don't know if it was or not. But I thought, well, that's interesting. But, you know, that's a little, is that too far? Who's with me? That's too far. Thank you. Thank you. I see that hand. That's too much. I have been known to be a little bit Grinch-like at Christmas. There was a season where my wife's ringtone, you know, you can set your ringtone for, you know, whoever's calling, and this is what her ringtone sounded like. You're a mean one, Mr. Grinch. I think one of our children did that for her because she didn't have the technical ability to figure that out herself. But maybe now she could figure it out. Anyways, that's, I gotta admit though, I have struggled at times at Christmas, not gonna lie. It's excess, if you will, the extravagance that gets, you know, put out here and the commercialism, if you will. It offends me to some degree. I think it has offended me more in the past maybe than it does now. But you know the excesses I'm talking about, all the extra parties and dinners you have to go to, all the extra food that you can have consumed already. I mean, and on it goes, right? You got to get the gift for this person and that person. My sister-in-law was sharing one time how in their cul-de-sac where they live in California, they have to buy everybody a present. Everybody. Because someone decided that was a thing to do. And you know what happens? If I give, you know, Lorena a present, what does she do? She's got to give me one back. I'm counting on that. Right? And she said, just so much stress, right? So much stress. You know the excesses I'm talking about. Extra food, extra drink, extra shopping, extra parties, extra traffic, extra, you know, all of the extra. It also strikes me as a little bit odd that we as the church have allowed, I think is the right word, some of this to happen to us. We are not innocents in all of this. Even the simple and small things like the Christmas story itself. Now, there are several misconceptions, innocent enough, but a bit misleading nonetheless. And I'm glad and it's good that you're all sitting down this morning because I'm about to blow some of your minds, rock some of your worlds. You're going to be gravely disappointed. The scripture does not mention a donkey. There is no donkey in the story. It's not there. It's not there. It's not there at all. Some of you are already Googling it. It's not there. There is no donkey. There's no mention of a donkey at all. There is no innkeeper mentioned at all, even though I played an innkeeper once in the Christmas pageant. In fact, I think I was a very good innkeeper. I was quite compassionate, I think, when I said, I'm sorry, there is no room in the inn. I think I meant it. I felt bad for Mary, even though she just had a pillow under her shirt. But there may not actually have been an actual inn. It's highly unlikely, as we sort of get the narrative flow of the story, it's highly unlikely that Joseph hauled Mary off to Bethlehem when she was 9 months pregnant, only to give birth the moment they arrived, and it's not likely in a barn. I don't know what kind of man Joseph would have been. He forgot there was a census? What? And he was like, oh, Mary, we have to go, but I'm 9 months. No, you'll be fine. I don't think so. It's not likely how it happened. The wise men, most of you probably know this one, the wise men were not there the same night at all. Much later, in fact, could be even up to 2 years later. Not certain that there were three. I mean, you can sing We Three Kings if you like, but it's not certain that there were three. And we were looking the other day, and it looks like in our nativity set, one of them is a lady. Doesn't that blow your world a little wee bit? You can all come have a look later, but I'm pretty sure this one back here is supposed to be, I mean, you got gold, frankincense, and myrrh, and that looks like a lady to me. Or, yeah, I think. We Three Kings of Orient are. The word Orient literally just means from the east, and it's highly likely these men were, and maybe ladies or group of people, were ones who followed a different religion, likely, historians tell us, Zoroastrianism. If you've never heard of that, go ahead and look it up. They followed a star probably 2 years later. So all those Christmas cards you have ready to hand out that have the star, just take a marker and cross off the star. Yeah, my wife says I'm grinchy. You're going to put that ringtone back, aren't you? They're probably from somewhere around modern-day Iraq. That's all in all likelihood. So it's highly unlikely there was a, you know, there were stars, I'm sure, but whether there was one shiny star, that's a beautiful song too, but it's just a lie, that's all. So the question becomes, why the development of all these elements? And the answer is a little bit difficult. I mean, there is another extra-biblical book, a gospel. I can't remember the name of it right now, but it was kind of written by someone a long time ago. And, you know, when they put the Bible together, they decided that it didn't have much truth element to it, so it didn't get included. But that extra-biblical piece of literature had a few of these things in it. Had a donkey, apparently. Artistry, I mean, you think about this amazing event that literally changed the world. That part's all true. How do you capture that in art? You know, how do you make it stand out so that we remember? And I think tradition just kind of carried some of that stuff along. It really is a tremendous and, you know, often it's said lowly birth. And that part's true. You'd think that for the king, you know, the king of the universe, the king of creation, the king of Israel. But of course, they were expecting something else, and so it's all a little bit different. So here we are, 20 centuries or so later, and what do we have? I honestly think that if Jesus went for a walk through our malls these days and saw, he'd probably go, what's this for? He would know, because he's Jesus, but he might ask the question to see what the response would be, because that's how he taught. And so why do you do this? I think he'd probably be like, really? Really? I think what has happened is that we have been, and I'll use this word, this phrase, sold out, or rather we have sold out. The highest bidder has come along and we have fallen under the spell of greed, self-centeredness, misplaced passions, sentimentalism, really, has replaced awe and wonder, and there's no lineup to see the baby Jesus, only a lineup to see who? Santa Claus. And you probably all have some pictures of it. Grandson, granddaughter, son, daughter with that screaming face. Certainly, hear me, certainly, much of what we have is not inherently bad on its own. Otherwise, we wouldn't do this. And we had a lot of fun doing this. That has undermined corporate Christmas, though, I think. We have a corporate reality, a business-like approach, money-making dynamic that has undermined the original ethos of the Christ event and replaced it with a story that is essentially, well, really empty. Empty people living empty lives, filling up their empty shopping carts to fill their empty, aching hearts and aching to do it all over next year or even sooner yet on Boxing Day. Do we have Boxing Day in Mexico? But do we know what Boxing Day is? Yeah. The day after Christmas when you take back all the junk that everybody gave you and trade it in for junk that you like. It's called Boxing Day. Do it all over again. The day after Christmas, our malls in Canada and sometimes, I don't know if the States do it, they're just packed again. Boxing Day. Really? How about Sleeping Day? Resting Day. Worshiping Day. So that wasn't depressing at all, was it? I don't think it needs to be that way, though, really. I don't think it does. I don't think it's too late. I think we can reclaim Christmas from the jaws of the corporate machine and still live in celebration and anticipation of all of the joy that this season can bring, and it should. I believe, though, that it is a heart attitude and a perspective thing. Heart and perspective. So just a couple of thoughts today to help us get started the right way, I think, and give it a little bit of a turn and head it in the other direction. Because salvation, redemption, grace, forgiveness, hope, joy, love, peace, the promise of eternity, all that we get, let me use that word in comparison to Christmas, all that we get that is due to the arrival of the Christ child starts in one heart, really, not on the corporate board table. So two key thoughts to get us started today. And I want to say this, have a heart of compassion, not a heart of compulsion. Compassion and not compulsion. Essentially, I think, what I believe partly is taking place here in I'll just call it North American society, and that includes us here in Mexico, of course, is what I would call obsessive compulsive disorder on a grand scale. How else do you explain some people's actions in days like these? Crazy people on Black Friday, Christmas lights on the spare tire of a Hummer, grown men and women pushing and shoving to find the right gift or the right toy for a child who will probably play with it for 3 days and then it'll be broken or put on the shelf. People certain that if they just do it right this year, if I don't invite crazy Aunt Edna to dinner, Christmas will be better. If I just have better, you know, fill in the blank. Better food, better clothes, better gifts, better Christmas lights than the neighbor. On and on and on. That it'll be better. What we have around us is the resulting condition of a compulsive behavior due to the obsession we have with self. Very much with self. I'll put part of this definition up on the board here for us. But the goal of a compulsion, this is not me writing, this is like American psychiatric stuff, like official. I couldn't make this up. The goal of a compulsion is to eliminate the threat posed by an obsession. Compulsive actions provide temporary relief from the distress, discomfort, or disgust caused by an obsession. And the author goes on to say this, compulsions can take the form of a mental strategy, such as when the means of removing the obsession is to replace obsessive thinking with a reassuring image or story. Okay, does this start to round into form when you start to think about what people do with Christmas? Or to count or to perform a magic ritual. This particular form of a compulsion is also known as neutralization. Neutralization. In order to neutralize, now this is me talking, in order to neutralize the collective emptiness that exists in the world, and this sounds depressing, I know, but I think this is a big part of it. In order to neutralize the collective emptiness that exists in the world, once a year we allow ourselves to get lost in the lie that the devil loves to perpetuate, that if we perform well, if we give well, eat well, drink well, smile well at the neighbor that we normally hate, etc. On and on and on and on and on. The solution is to live in a way that does not require a yearly fix. Does not require a yearly fix. I think the solution lies there, partly. Have a compassionate heart. Give when the need is real, not when it seems to be required or expected. And I don't just mean money. I mean time, self, of your home, hospitality, all of those things. Live. You could rephrase this and go, live generously. Don't expect return. If you give me a gift, I won't expect anything back. I promise. Don't expect return. Or you shouldn't expect anything back, is what I started to say. Serve others in humility. Don't follow the crowd and get caught up in the flow. Have any of you ever been caught in like a, I don't know the correct phrasing, like a riptide or an undercurrent? Anyone ever been caught in one of those? What do you got to do to get out of it? Yeah, exactly. Head in another direction. I think there is a strong undercurrent in our society that wants to pull us along in this direction that has a lot to do with self. You got to reverse and go the other way or cut across it or something. Or you risk being swept out to sea. John Stott, Pastor John Stott, Bible teacher, scholar from England, he's passed away several years ago. He's talking about the Sermon on the Mount, and he says the Sermon on the Mount, that section in John in the early chapters, the Sermon on the Mount really is a playbook for how to live cross-current or counter-current in our culture. Counter-current. You got to swim against the current or upstream or whatever it takes. Because you can get caught in it before you know it and get pulled in. I think the Apostle Paul nails it. I want to read a passage of Scripture from Paul in 1 Timothy chapter 6. Listen to this. This is from, I think it's from the Message version of the Bible. You gain a lot when you live a godly life, he says. But you must be happy with what you have. We didn't bring anything into the world, and we can't take anything out of it. If we have food and clothing, we will be happy with that. People who want to get rich are tempted. They follow into trap. They are tripped up by wanting many foolish and harmful things. Those who live like that are dragged down by what they do. They are destroyed and die. Love for money causes all kinds of evil. Some people want to get rich. They have wandered away from the faith. They have wounded themselves with many sorrows. I think that describes perfectly kind of the way that empty feeling returns for a lot of people following Christmas. Because it just didn't fill them up. So have a heart of compassion and not compulsion. Don't decorate, rather demonstrate. This is the second point this morning. Don't decorate, but rather demonstrate. We need to remember that celebration should be a part of the incarnation, remembering the incarnation. Okay, I'll put that out there. It should be a part. But Christmas celebration, hear me this morning, Christmas celebration really isn't biblical. It's not really biblical in a sense. And what I mean by that is all the stuff that we've added, obviously. We're not told to remember Christmas. We are told we're to remember this, the Lord's Supper. We're to remember this. Probably, I think, my contention is that we probably should do this every week. But we don't. But we do remember the essence of it every week. But Christmas has arisen out of a biblical mandate, but more out of a traditional repeat. Someone started it, this is what I mean by that, someone started it and we keep it going. We could go into the historical stuff if you'd like some other time, but basically that's what it is. So I've said that, now let me say this, I think it's a good thing. There goes my Scrooge persona. Gone. I've actually already got into the spirit of Christmas. Like, I really enjoyed what we did here the other day. Did you notice my attitude was a little different? I was talking to one of the staff after through Google Translate because my Spanish still is terrible. But he said to me, that was such a fun afternoon. And we were just having fun, decorating and celebrating. What I think we need to remember is that the outward adornment, hear me this part, the outward adornment that seems to be intrinsically connected to our celebrations, okay? The outward adornment, that means the decorations and decorating ourselves, that seems to be intrinsically connected to our celebrations can take the place of the demonstrative or the demonstrated nature of what ought to flow out of our hearts. All the stuff can take the place of what should be coming out of our hearts. Let me put this up. Christmas is pretty. Trees are nice. Lights are beautiful. But to get caught up in that Yet to fail and remember what it points to is not only foolish, but I think, particularly for those of us who are followers of Christ, it borders on or is akin to idolatry. Are we worshiping Christmas or are we worshiping the Savior? It never ceases to amaze me the way in which society, and you see this, I mean, just pay attention, the way society acknowledges or embraces the concept of Christmas, but it rails against traditional belief, and it calls those us who have faith, you know, somehow we're intellectual children, foolish faith. Yet these same people will run off in search of hope and happiness, listening to their favorite artists sing holiday songs. Have you seen that? Have you seen that? A couple things here this morning. Church, do not replace the call to demonstrate the love of Christ and the hope that you have with outward and false adornment of stuff. Looking good, if there's anything you remember this morning, looking good is not the same as righteousness. Modeling the spirit and heart of the incarnate Christ is the issue. Not at Christmas, all year. We love because he loved us first. We care because he cares. We're humble because he did. We show and express mercy because he did to us first. And on and on and on. God demonstrates his love for us in this, that while we were yet sinners, Christ died for us, Paul says. He did it first. We do it. That is why the baby was born. That is why and what and how his followers should strive to demonstrate the love of God in Christ to others who do not yet know this love. And of course, because of the amplification, if I can use that word, of what's taking place in this season, it becomes a natural time to do it. But it should be the natural stance of those who follow Jesus. Our celebrations, our demonstrations, our decorations, our gatherings, our parties, our seasonal joy all need to point back to this and be ever in front of us, if we can say it that way. And secondly, church, don't get caught up in corporate Christmas, sold out to the latest sale, enslaved along with others in this dysfunctional society, really. Let's be different, okay? Let's be different. I want to put this slide up to close. Maybe some of you saw that already in the letter. This is some of the artwork that you're going to receive next week in your weekly worship folder. They'll be handed out for a couple of weeks, I think 3 weeks before Christmas. They're going to be beautiful. A local artist that Dwayne knows has done this work for us, and I'm not going to give away the rest of the art because it's actually really quite excellent. We're talking about Emmanuel, or some of you have spelled that with an I before, Emmanuel. God with us. There's a stick picture of Mary and Joseph and cradling the baby Jesus in the Times announcing our service. Here's what I've noticed in a couple of years that I've been here for Christmas Eve services. It's kind of a bit of a culmination because what happens is, this is anecdotal, but the roads in Mexico City are absolutely ridiculous leading up to Christmas. I love going for drives on Christmas Day and, well, Boxing Day for me. Because, like, you could shoot a cannon down Reforma and there's nobody out there. It seems like Christmas Eve is almost like a bit of a culmination. Christmas Day, Christmas Eve, and then it's just people go away or whatever happens. Christmas Eve here at this church is typically quite beautiful and wonderful, candlelight, all that kind of stuff. I've also noticed that a lot of people from the community come. A lot. I think last year we had, in the two services, we had close to 500 people come through here. It's wonderful. It's fantastic. This year we're doing a bit of a joint celebration with Union, and Ecclesia is going to be joining us as well. We're doing two services. We are asking that you begin to pray and think, and Dwayne's doing exactly the same thing this morning in their service. Begin to pray, think, and wonder aloud, you know, holy wondering, if you will, with God, who shall I invite this year to the Christmas Eve service? Because we're making it a celebration, but yet there's going to be a message that we want to share with people, that God is with us in the middle of the city. And that is a bit of a tip to the artwork you'll see next week. We want you to begin to pray and think and consider Not just this is a thing we come to because it's what we do, it's Christmas Eve and isn't it beautiful and we'll sing some songs. No, it's going to be an opportunity to share the light, the love, and the message of Jesus with our city. Last year we did this thing where we went outside and we lit the candles, and remember that? We stood over there and we sang Silent Night. And the idea, the metaphor, the idea with this was that we are the light of the world. And we're taking our light out. We want to emphasize that again this year. And so this is one way you can begin to, in the hustle and bustle and the rush and all the corporateness of Christmas, begin to, I think, bring your thoughts into focus. Maybe put some new meaning. Is who does God want me to love this Christmas in a way? By giving them something that they would begin to maybe take a couple of steps more towards Jesus. This season is a fabulous opportunity. I pray that you will take that thought, that idea, that challenge seriously this season.